The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com.
Today. They are both from the Ben Zeighton Center for Creative Arts. So JB Burkow is with us. She's a renowned artist and the founder and president of the center. And then we also have rising star and hot shop manager, Grace. Say your last name for me again, Grace.
Chepnick.
Chepnick. Thank you. I'm so terrible with the pronunciation, but thank you both for being here.
Our pleasure.
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this conversation and diving into it. There is so much about the center that it's just a huge hub for artists and visitors. So I have lots of questions. But first, we're going to start with you, JB, and just kind of get into a little bit of background and how you got started. And so I've, you know, wanted to know, you've had this incredible career in the arts, multi-genre, you work in various mediums, you've done a lot of business as an artist. Was there a moment in your life where, you know, there was like a little aha and I know I'm going to devote my life to the arts world?
I think almost from the very beginning, because when I was only 26 living in Washington, D.C., there was no cooperative gallery in the city. So, you know, emerging artists, young artists had no place to exhibit their work. So I started a gallery called Touchstone Gallery, which is still thriving today. And that was the first cooperative gallery in Washington, D.C. So besides doing my own work, which I've always been very serious about, there's been a side of me that always liked promoting other artists' work. I can't explain why.
Well, community thrives together, right? Yeah. It's probably something that you innately recognize that rising tides raise all ships, as the saying goes, that if you're doing well and you can share some piece of knowledge. I know you're an author as well. Actually, you have several books available, one of which is about, you know, being the business of the arts and the things that they didn't teach you in art school.
Yeah, what they didn't teach you in art school.
So it sounds like you really have devoted your career and your path in life to, you know, in service to the arts, which is beautiful. And Grace, you and I maybe share a little bit of a similarity in story where you started as a painter and I think you had an influence from your grandmother.
Yes.
And then now you've kind of really dove into the world
of
glass. So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, so I went to school for painting. I always thought since I was 10 years old, I'm going to be a painter. And I remember even at my senior year of high school, I met a ceramics guy and he said, you're going to switch when you get to college. And I said, you don't know me. I'm not going to switch to 3D art. He said, that's the best art that there is. And I went and I took a glass class. And I remember the first time I was in front of the furnace, I genuinely thought I was going to burn my hand off and I was going to sue the school for my art career. That never happened, but I got through it. And I was just so amazed like by this material. And I was just, it pushes me in so many ways, like physically, that I was like, this is such a fun art. And I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I kept taking all the classes. I ran out of classes to take by my sophomore year in glass. I was so enthralled. So the professor worked with me. She devoted her time to independent studies with me. And I just continued with the glass and I kind of did switch my major to glass by the end of my college degree.
Yeah, that's fantastic when you really tap into some area that you flow into in an unexpected way. Yeah. It's very exciting.
Totally. And it's just such a different part of me, I think, than the painting. Like, with, you know, I was saying earlier to you that with the painting, it can be nice and calm. And then when I went in front of the fire, I'm like, this is a whole different side of me that I didn't know. And pushes my capabilities. And it was just so much fun that I wanted to stick with it and keep trying it.
So for a viewer, I would ask then, you know, when we were to look at your work, if we're looking at your glass work and your painting, is there a thread through them or are they really separate identities?
I will say they're pretty separate identities. I think when I paint very, very bright and like very vivid imagery and colors. And when I first started working with glass, I was like, okay, I'm going to try to use this glass as a paint. And with glass, you cannot mix colors, like how you mix paint. Everything I first made the first few years was all brown because there was just so many layers of colors that didn't like each other. So I tried to translate that in the beginning, but it's interesting. I mean, I had some friends that say, even when you sculpt a face, you can tell that it's your hands that made it because it somewhat looks like the faces that you paint. I don't know what it is about certain noses that I don't know. Like there are characteristics that travel over, but I think with the glass, I'm a little bit limited in a sense by what I can physically make just because of how challenging the material is. Whereas painting, it's a totally open canvas. I can go anywhere with it. So you have a lot more freedom, I think, with that. So the glass is a little bit restrictive in what skills do you have to push what you can make, but that's also the fun part of it for me. Sure. You know, so.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, both are great because techniques are ever expanding, right? Mm-hmm. For an artist, there's no ultimate plateau. You just keep growing.
Yeah.
And JB, so you're, I feel like, really known for your oil painting. That was probably the way that I was first introduced to your work. Mm-hmm. But you also do glass work as well. In fact, you're wearing some of it today, right?
Yeah.
So tell us about this kind of work that you do now with the glass.
Well, this is flame work, hollow. These big ones are hollow beads. And actually, this whole thing isn't that heavy because the big pieces are hollow.
And I've seen also you do casting as well with your glass pieces that has flame work layered on top, which looks very complex to me, and I'm sure it is.
Yes.
So how did that area start for you? When was it that you got into glass work?
Well, actually, it came about by founding Van Zuyten because I am known for my European landscapes and cityscapes in oil. They're very intricately detailed. And I sold a lot, but I missed the female figure. So I started sculpting about 30 years ago. And every time I had to do something and cast it in bronze, I had to go over to Sarasota because there really weren't that many studios here on the East Coast of Florida that were open to artists. There were individual artist studios, but they wouldn't necessarily take outside artists' work. So I thought, this is kind of stupid. You know, you know, we're selling so much art on the East Coast of Florida, and we don't have places to fabricate three-dimensional artwork. So that was the impetus to starting Van Zuyten. And so when we started with glass because everybody's interested in glass and glass is sexy. And it was a terrific move because it really helped us get off the ground. Now we have almost everything covered in the form of any kind of thing you can do in glass. And now we need to create a small foundry. And then we'll have stone carving. So we'll have all the three major three-dimensional mediums under one roof.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, the space that you're in too, right? It's a historic train station. Does that influence the way that, you know, you use the space at all? Like the creative energy that's there?
Yeah, we have to putty down everything on the shelves or they travel off and it's a big mess the next day. It's terrible.
I also feel like glass is just this like laborious industrial, you know, material. And that just like really reiterates that being in this train station building, you feel like it's like this hands-on heavy duty material. And even, you know, taking a workshop for the first time, you can feel that energy while you're there as well.
Yeah.
I have to tell you a funny story because this was a depot building and it had been gifted to the city of Lake Worth and they hadn't done anything to it in several years and it had gone to really tremendous rack and roll. They were filming zombie pictures in this place.
Okay, I'm getting a very strong visual image now.
And I walked in to the building and immediately knew it was absolutely perfect for its purpose. I mean, especially with the bay doors on both sides, we didn't have to even build a very expensive heat capturing unit because all you do is open the bay doors. So, but my first board members that came to see this place that I was raving about being so perfect, they thought I had completely taken leave of my senses.
You have a different sense of vision than other people. Yeah. is what I'm getting.
Transformed that building. We have original photos of how the building looked when you walk into the center, so you can see all of the construction that it went under. Wow. And now even our gallery space, it's such a high elevated, beautiful space that you would have no idea this would have been in a zombie picture film years prior. It's really crazy how beautiful she's turned.
And now you're attracting visitors and artists from all over the world.
All over the world.
So tell us about some of the traveling artists that are coming. They're doing seminars and, you know, those are available to people to come watch and take those.
Tell them about Fabiano.
Yeah. So one of our next upcoming visiting artists is Fabiano Zonchi. He is a third generation Italian maestro and his family specializes in chandeliers. And last year he created the first ever chandelier class that was taught in the world. I took the second ever. It was the second week of the class and I got to make a chandelier with him, which was just incredible. And this year he's coming back to our studio as a visiting artist for a residency for a week where he will be making one of his personal chandeliers. And the week prior, he's going to be teaching 8 students from start to finish how to make a chandelier in about a week, which is just incredible. Yeah. So we have different visiting artists from all around the world. One of our most recent artists was Shelley Mazalowski Allen, which she's one of the pioneer glassblowing female artists from the West Coast in the Seattle Pacific Northwest area. And she was incredible. Each year we get 4 different visiting artists, 1 emerging kind of local talent, and then 3 other artists that are just come from all around the world. And it's really expanded, you know, our studio's education. Every time we have someone come from a different part, we all learn different things and it translates into our work. And
absolutely.
So it's such a gift back for us, but then also back for the community because we host a 3-hour demonstration that we sell tickets for that include a band, some food, music. So it's a great way to get the community involved. And then we also, you know, promote that artist and sell their work in the gallery as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So with, you know, the artist creating a chandelier in such a limited time and space, is that something that is on display then for any longer that people can come appreciate afterwards?
Yes, and hopefully buy.
Yeah,
absolutely. We sold the one he made last year. And now so far this year, I think we have 2 commissions in the works.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. So that helps us. That absolutely helps our bottom line.
To work as well. Like we're all able to assist him and just even assisting, you learn so much from, you know, how to create.
Well, you started making flowers.
Yeah. And he grew kind of a business for me and my glass partner, David Mateo. Mm-hmm. Last year after he came, he taught us how to make all these different flowers. And for months, we were just obsessed. That's all we wanted to do.
I believe it. Now, this might be a little bit of what I've seen on the website, too, examples of his work. The chandeliers are stunning. And I mean, the level of intricacy is just mind-blowing. So it's really incredibly exciting that in our area, there's, you know, this kind of masterwork happening and available to go see in person and watch, you know, it being created.
And it's amazing, how it really impacts everyone's art at the studio who kind of sees it be made and, you know, and translates into so many different ways, our color theory, our techniques, how we cut the glass, everything. It really gets really defined and good when we have such a high level of caliber of artists coming in.
You just get better and better by the osmosis of being near somebody that's just being in front of
it. It is great.
Okay, so tell us what a day in the life of a hotshot manager looks like. What does that role entail?
Well, what I love about Vinzaiten is every day it really does change. So I come in at about 9 a.m. and I always start by unloading our kiln, firing up all of our equipment. Each day is different. We rent to local artists. So I check our schedule. Sometimes we have 3 artists working. Sometimes we have 1. It depends on my day. Sometimes I will be doing a demonstration for different local groups. So we give them a talk and we show them how we make a piece. We also teach classes. So some days I'm teaching classes or making production for our studio or gallery. So there's really every day there's a new challenge that we can tackle in there, which is a lot of fun. And we just make sure we take care of
it. It's never boring.
It's never boring.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Yeah, really.
Yep. So very changing job. So
I wanted to talk a little bit about the founding again. And I know you mentioned earlier, you know, your role has changed and adapted through the years. So you're maybe not spending as much time in the studio anymore. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it's, you know, it's a busy happening place. So you might have to elbow your way back in eventually when you want to get back to it. Mm-hmm. Tell us about, you know, how you, I guess, are leading the center through, you know, through the community, but also for the broader South Florida you know, broader country of visitors that are coming to this, you know, the workshops, to see the gallery, how you kind of have, how your vision has grown for the center and where you are leading it into in the future.
Well, I mean, the ideal situation is to make that whole area of Lake Worth an area where art is made. I mean, I can see this going beyond the actual depot building and maybe getting a hold of other buildings close by, turning them into woodworking studios, a print atelier. I mean, you know, it could go on and on. I mean, my work right now is really concentrating on keeping the board, building the board, expanding the board, expanding the different groups of people we introduce to Ben Zeiten, getting out there in the community, socializing. I mean, this is what a director of development does for an organization, but we're brand new. We're 10 years old. That's not that old. And we can't afford a director of development. So that kind of thing falls on me.
Yeah, you're still boots on the ground.
Yes.
Definitely. So, you know.
That's why I'm a chamber trustee.
Okay. Of course. That's good. It's all about community at the end of the day.
Yes, it is. And, it's about building relationships. You know, it's not really fundraising. It's friend raising.
There you go.
That's really where it's at.
So tell us about some of the programming outside of the workshops that, you know, if somebody wanted to get involved in, you know, fundraising help, in, you know, bringing awareness to the center.
Well, you know, we really have such unique events going on. Now, Fifth Thirds Bank, for example, this year found out about some of our programming and decided to underwrite one of our Friday night, what we call the Artist Blowout, where we have the 3-hour demo to live music, and it's a really happening scene. Well, you know, they get 10 seats to bring either clients or their team. And they were so excited and so enthralled by the whole experience, they wound up underwriting the Shelley Musilowski 2 events, which is on Thursday night before the blowout for certain artists, not all artists, but very well-known artists. We have a thing called Meet the Artist Dinner, where they do a very short demo, and then we eat dinner. It's a sit-down affair in the gallery. It's limited to 40 Beautiful. People, so it's very
delicious food.
Delicious food, very elegant. And then the artist does a PowerPoint lecture, short, not long, takes questions, and it's really a unique experience. So Fifth Thirds was really thrilled to be a part of that, because that's the kind of thing I think that businesses like to pay back either with their team or their high-end clients to invite them to something unique like that.
Absolutely. Something, I mean, very memorable.
Yes, very memorable.
And so unique to the area. Like you said, you know, these kind of creative centers are not just everywhere you go. They're very, you know, special and unique. So that sounds like a
beautiful
event.
And we do an event for the symphony every year.
And what is it? Do you have players come or glassblowers
They provide the music and we provide the demo. And, you know, they love it. The members love it. It was very successful.
I bet that combination
year.
Is magical.
It is really nice. Yeah. Beautiful. And it's kind of like, you know, whoever is doing the demonstration, they're also orchestrating and, you know, being that. Conducting like their own little show while that's going on as well with the symphony. So they loved it. It was a great event this year.
I love that combo. So how do you, this is a question for both of you. How do you think you've seen a change in the way that the public interacts with art at Ben Zeiten?
Well, I think with glass specifically, when we think about glass, I feel like most people think windshields and utilitarian use, actual glasses, your phone screen, all these things that we use in our everyday life, and they don't think of glass as art. And they come into the studio for the first time, and even just staying in the gallery, they'll stay in there for 30 minutes just being in awe, you know, getting late to their workshop because they're just so taken aback by all of like the incredible things that this material has the possibility to be. And I don't think people really realize all the capabilities of glass until they come to a studio that's like ours and it has all these different artists and these different works, just masterpieces. You know, that they realize, wow, what a medium that this is and, you know, the possibilities of it. So,
yeah,
What do you think, Jamie?
I think the biggest takeaway was part of my mission for doing this, because I have run galleries for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And most lay people would see a sculpture and they'd say, well, why is it that much money? And it would frustrate me because they had no clue. And, you know, even explaining it to them wouldn't necessarily do it justice. So part of what I wanted to do was to have classes, to have these demos, to let the people come and see what hard work it is, how many years it takes mm-hmm. for an artist to get good at just doing a simple mm-hmm. thing like a flower. Yep. You know, it took you hours and days mm-hmm. and months to get really proficient at it.
Well, 100%. It's like the question that I feel like some artists dread and some others don't care about it, but the question of like, how long did this piece take you?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And my answer is usually when somebody asks about my work, it took me 15 years.
Exactly.
You mm-hmm. know, we're not counting the hours that mm-hmm. went into just this one thing, yes, because all the hours before it mattered to mm-hmm. get to here.
To get to that muscle memory that you've developed to be able to create that. And how many mistakes were made? How many things wound up on the floor and
broken
crystal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say honestly, the first whole year that I was creating, I would say 80% of my pieces cracked or broke. And even looking back now, I would say like my first 5 years of work, nothing I would be proud of to look at now, you know? So it's just all this trial and error. And it's just this art that just teaches you so much about perseverance. And
truly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really dedication. When you're working that hard, mm-hmm. spending that many hours on something that at the end of the day,
you don't know.
You might not have a finished anything.
100%.
You might have other than the time that you put into it.
Yeah, but all those hours that do amount to something, and they're worth something in the work, and it does. That's what makes it valuable. So,
So when you get a piece that's done and you're happy with it and mm-hmm. it stays intact, you just must be like dancing all over the studio.
Yep, it's really exciting. She says we all do our little happy dance when we know it's good to go. But then, there's also the problems with the shipping and it's a finicky material to be able to keep in control.
Now, when people are, coming and visiting the gallery and they're, looking for maybe a unique gift, a piece of art mm-hmm. to collect for their own, mm-hmm. what kind of things are they looking at in the gallery?
We've got a wide range. It goes from $5 to $25,000. And so we have a really nice gift shop full of all kinds of unique items that are very, very reasonably priced.
And let me say, what I love about working at Benzaiten is Joanne's creative direction. Like, for example, right now it's spring and she's asked me to make some bunnies. And so she said, just have fun and figure out how to make some bunnies. And it's like, this is playtime for me. You know, this doesn't feel like work at all. I can't believe this is my job. And it teaches me how to sculpt. And now we have all these arrays of just different kinds of bunnies because she, it's a dynamic moving and she trusts her artist to bring some sort of vision to life. And mm-hmm. so we have that creative direction that we're allowed to take and those risks and, while we're learning and playing and experimenting, and then it reflects on the art and our gift shop. It's all of our studio artists or our renters putting their work in. Mm-hmm. So it not only supports, the center, but it comes back to us as well.
Yeah,
and
that's amazing.
They're very generous at the studio. It's one of the few studios that I've worked at where they make sure that our art is a priority as well. Joanne gives us 4 hours a week, each week in the studio, which is extremely valuable time to make our own work. And we work with each other. It continues to build that community between us and pushes our skills and invests in our happiness. And we give it right back to the studio happily. So it makes a big difference. And all those little things that we make, we put in the gallery or the gift shop, depending.
Yeah. Having a space like that just mm-hmm. means so much to an artist, doesn't it?
It does.
Where,
yeah.
You can not only spend your hours having a well-functioning studio, mm-hmm. but you can find yourself in collaborations with people that maybe you didn't expect.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me. Yeah. I love artists collaborating with each other. And so that was the other purpose of bringing these three mediums under one roof. And it's already starting, mm-hmm. like they started working with the welder and the metal. And so I'm very anxious to get the foundry going, but it takes more networking,
right?
Friend raising.
Definitely. Definitely. So I was wondering if there are any other, I mean, we've talked about, you know, the chandelier and the fact that this workshop is coming back for a third time.
So it's the first chandelier class. Last year he did just a master kind of Venetian techniques class.
Okay, fantastic.
And that's where he taught all of the different flowers that we could make. And we played with that for 6 months after he left, just to, you know, kind of hound down and perfect what he's taught us.
So besides his, you know, time there, is there another visiting artist that has struck either of you with like a really memorable moment?
Well, I would say our last artist, Shelly Muzzolowski, it was incredible because she had just broken her wrist 2 months prior, and she hadn't been blowing glass for 2 months. And it was her first week back in the studio. And to watch her, this short little lady, come in and direct all of us exactly what she needs, point out, and just be a total boss in the studio, it was so inspiring. And then also how she used color. So she's one of the first to really like layer glass powders in a very specific manner. And she had a painting background as well. And she would put the glass powder on, wipe it off, and really treated it like layering, like layers of paint. And it was the first time that it clicked for me. I can layer it with paint. I just can't do it all in one. Like I used to try, you know? And so like that was really inspiring. And now I'm playing with that in my work.
Did you do some of that with that vase you did?
Yes.
I thought so.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, you take little snippets of everyone's little pieces and you put it into your own.
Aha moments. Sounds like potentially every time, you know, somebody different is coming into the studio.
Yeah, I think you never can stop learning. And the more open you are to that education, the more it's going to trickle in and push your work further. So,
what about when you have those classes of people who, and you've said you offered them for people who have never touched glasswork in their life? So what kind of aha moments do you see? And like, what kind of classes do you offer there?
I'll go over the classes we offer first. We do offer like an introduction to glass. So if you really, first we always recommend the experience. So you come, you're with the instructor, step by step, we're there to make sure you don't get hurt. You're going to get a pretty nice piece out of it. And we're there to help you like the whole step of the way. And that is a great way to just feel the glass, kind of get your hands wet and see if it's something you're interested in. Because some people stand in front of that heat and they said, never again.
Gotcha.
So it does take a special kind of person to want to be able to work with this medium. But some people, we get what they call the glass bug and they're addicted and they're hooked. And so then they come back and they take a 6-week introduction course, which is amazing. We have incredible instructors for that. And it's 3 hours once a week, $600, which is an incredibly reasonable price.
For any art workshop, but for glass especially. Yeah, I mean, totally. This is very specialized material you're working with.
You know, they learn how to gather, how to pop the bubble, all of the beginning steps of how to, you know, kind of get in. And after that, we offer another intermediate class. So those classes are just really great. And when people come in, when they don't have any glass knowledge, it always pushes us with the glass knowledge. They just treat it differently because they don't know its limitations. And then we think, oh, maybe we can push it this way or that way. I had one student, he's been taking private lessons with me and he can barely gather, but he said, I want to make a tree about 3 feet tall. And I said, all right, I'll try. Yeah. And that was just, it was a lot. We're still working on it.
Okay.
Step by step, you know, piece by piece, we're making it little by little, but
it looked good the other day.
We're going to glue it all together. And it's just, I've never assembled something this large. And it's like, so it's teaching me because I didn't say no. And he, you know, he just had this wild, crazy idea. So sometimes people do with no knowledge come in with the craziest ideas. And we say, okay, let's try to make that work.
Okay. Well, it's great to have the attitude of let's see what happens. Maybe don't get super attached to an outcome.
Yes.
But let's try.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, the more we try, the more we learn. And it's great.
And that's incredibly encouraging for somebody who is just stepping into a medium, right? Because there's many moments that have been recounted to me of friends who went to art school and had experiences where their professors were just like, just shut it down. We're not doing that. This is the right way to do something. And we're only going to direct you in that way, as opposed to.
And I will say, I think a few other glassblowers would say, no, you cannot make that tree. But I was up for the challenge. And I just think it's like, how much of a challenger are you up for? How much you're able to grow too.
Well, there's always good lessons in that, right? Whether something works out or not, you can expand your skills as an instructor and then, you know, they get to expand their skills and potentially their recognition of how difficult skills might be, yes, that they need to work, you know, so many more hours put into their craft until mm-hmm. they can get that 3-foot tree.
Yep, totally.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I have more questions, but we are going to take just a brief break and we're going to hear from a word from our sponsors, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait, because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
All right, so we're talking with Dr. Alberto Ortiz, a nephrologist from TGH Advanced Kidney Care. Doc, thank you so much for being here. Let's talk about kidney disease. I hear it is a silent killer. Is that correct?
That is very correct. And kidney disease, you have to lose about 80% of your kidney function in order to have any symptoms at all. And once you do get to that point, the symptoms are very nonspecific that you can find in other conditions like generalized weakness, fatigue, and poor appetite.
How do you treat it?
So we have, when you get to that point, we have what we call renal replacement therapies, and it consists on hemodialysis, in which we have a machine doing the filtering of the blood and replacement of the kidney. And then we have a kidney transplant, in which you get another kidney from somebody else.
All right, so that sounds bad. I don't want to get there, Doc. So how do I prevent it?
So we have different therapies coupled with good lifestyle modifications and good healthy eating and exercise do go a long way.
Great, Doc. Well, thank you so much. And that was your Medical Minute brought to you by TGH.
So I'm going to talk about more the magic of glass blowing. And first, I'm going to direct this at you, JB. It's such an intense hands-on art form. What were some of the first projects that you started working on in the medium, and then how has that kind of transformed into the pieces that you like to do lately, I'll say?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're all part of the same body of work, really, that I started with the bronze casting. Okay, it's very sensual female figures, and usually with some kind of leaf or, you know, natural objects like flowers or leaves or things like that. I like to combine those two. And so I started with this simple, it was 11 inches, just a bust of a woman with hair going crazy, because I love that. And so that became my summer, spring, winter, and fall series. And so to create the different seasons, I would put a little bit of paint on each one, like the bottom where the leaf, she was dressed in a leaf bodice. Mm-hmm. For summer, I kind of used some green paint, you know, very, very lightly, but it stains the glass. It almost makes it look like green glass if you do it right. If you use the right transparent oil colors, it can really have a beautiful effect. Okay,
see, and I didn't realize that, because I looked at the pieces on the website and I didn't realize that they were painted.
Yes.
Because they did, they look like, you know, colored glass.
Yeah, I'm not the only one that does this. The other artists do. You have to be careful, because you can't use too solid a color, because it will come through the glass.
It just take away all the glass quality.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to be careful. It took a bit of learning to figure out how to do it. And, you know, I create the eyes and a little bit of, you know, mouth color and the tips of her hair, like her green. And then I'll do some roses, because roses are a summer flower. And once I do the roses in the flame working studio, or the fall leaves, or the crystals for snow, or the periwinkles and little bird nests for the spring, then you actually glue them onto the piece.
Okay.
They're glued on.
And now with casted glass,
Are you doing a really limited edition of work? How do you determine?
Well, on the bigger, on these four seasons, it is an open edition.
Okay.
But each one is completely different, you know, and they're signed. On the larger pieces, they will be a limited casting of 8. And again, each one will be completely different. Like I'm doing a Geisha Girls series. And so that's where my painting comes in. Now, you can't paint the whole kimono that they're wearing because that would show through. It would mess up the glass. So I sculpted each one to have a trail going back of her. And the end of the kimono, I can paint pretty elaborately. Yeah.
So she's got just like a decorative train that sort of starts to have color.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm so, you know, I have to think now, okay, what's going to work in glass? So it's a completely different medium.
Yeah. Yeah. And Grace, what about you? What is one of the wildest things that you have ever attempted so far in glass?
Well, I think actually 2 or 3 weeks ago, right before our gala, we were all asked to donate a big piece, and we had a team of 4 in that studio that day. So I got to feel like Shelley and direct all these men around me, which was awesome. I felt like a good boss. And I hot sculpted this big bowl that I put individualized seashells on. And it was just this really repetitive moment of I would cut the glass, I would squeeze it, I'd elongate it, and I would make all of these seashells, and I think it's covered in about 80 seashells.
Wow.
So 80 times I had to have somebody else bring me a piece of glass that was colored in the specific manner that I showed
them
how.
It's beautiful.
And then I, at the end, you know, recoloring it. And it's, you know, we spent, I think, 2 hours making this piece, and my arm was covered in heat rashes and burns. And we got it out of the oven, and it was just the most exciting thing. And it was the scale, I think, that I've been really trying to push recently. Mm-hmm. So I've been hitting the gym a lot more recently so that I can hold a lot more glass, because it's such a physical art. And, you know, I don't want my physical like limits to be the limit of my art.
Right.
And so it's something that I'm working towards to work bigger, to lift heavier, which has been a lot of fun. So this last piece was very big and very heavy. And when I say very heavy, I mean, it was probably 12 pounds, which does not sound like a lot. But when you're rotating that on the end of
for
2 hours, your wrist gets a little bit tired.
I think so. Yeah. I hope you tell your accountant that your gym membership is a write-off.
It might be a write-off.
Right.
I wouldn't have massaged our write-off because I want to start getting nice.
You know, don't take financial advice from me, but it sounds reasonable.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, your body really is one of your biggest tools in the studio, and just learning how to move correctly and with it is something that's really awesome.
Yep.
One of our board members, really quick, is Rob Stern, and he's really famous for lifting huge, really heavy pieces. Mm-hmm. The other week he came to all of us and said, just so you know, as somebody who's been doing this for the last 30 or 40 years, I'm not too sure, this is how you do everything correctly, because now my body, 30 years later, is really hurting from some of these movements that you do every day. And so just even learning how to do those movements right makes a big difference.
I mean, I'm sure that's a fantastic part of education that a lot of people wouldn't think of when you're really doing physical, repetitive, you know, motions like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, even, you know, I go to a chiropractor and he always talks to me about the tightness in my shoulder. I'm like, well, you know, well, right hand did it. I'm constantly stretching out across these big canvases. Mm-hmm. So that's an important part of, you know, being creative persons and realizing how much of your blood, sweat, tears, and everything else is going
into it.
The physical work of creating and sustaining that over decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive. 12 pounds sounds like a lot. Trust me, when you're rotating it, for sure. So you both, you know, have painting as your background, or, you know, I'll say background, as a medium that you've come up from. How much, you know, would you say the way you work in glass differs from the way you work in painting? You kind of mentioned energetically it's different. Maybe painting is more relaxing for you.
Yeah. And glasswork is painting it. I'm more tapped into my feminine energy when I'm there. I'm more calm and when I'm in the glass studio, it's such a masculine energy that you have to kind of step into. And it's also just a really a male dominated field that we're slowly taking over little by little. And Joanne's making sure that we have a lot of estrogen in the studio, thank God. So, you know, I think that it's kind of balancing those two things is really important. And it just calls from different sides of me, which I enjoy, you know, to respond to. So
what do you think? your version of painting versus your version of glass working? How do you feel the difference between?
As I said before, I got into the sculpting because I missed doing the painting, the female figure. So I figured I'll sculpt it while still doing my landscapes mm-hmm. and cityscapes of Europe. But I really prefer sculpting because I find the painting can be more tedious. And I like working three-dimensional because sometimes it takes you places that you didn't expect.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. And I just really prefer sculpting. Of course, all my friends are like, their hair's on fire. You know, you're not painting anymore. Well, it's not. Yeah. Listen, I'm getting older. You know, I have to do what makes me happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sacrifices you're willing to make as a creative person. Mm-hmm. You're like, this is the area that lights me up a little bit more. I'm going to mm-hmm. follow that path. Yeah. Yeah. And I've always loved work that forces you to be really physical with it. So whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, textured, large scape paintings mm-hmm. that I'm literally moving my body across the mm-hmm. canvas mm-hmm. or like I said, kind of a hobby of mine is, you know, getting into ceramics, hand sculpting mostly. I love that. Mm-hmm. Anything that sort of gets your body into the creative act.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
too rigid.
I think too, one of my goals is to start to kind of merge my paintings with the glass and learning how to layer, you know, both sides of me and just put it onto like a work that's all parts of me, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Putting glass on top of the canvas so it's kind of building out and starting to make a sculpture with the painting underneath.
A future exhibit maybe.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's one of the directions I'm excited to kind of explore a bit more.
Is that something that you ever do with the space there, specific rotating exhibits?
Well, we are always bringing in the visiting artists, so mm-hmm. we feature their work and the new work from the staff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So things are always changing. I would
say every day, other day, maybe it changes a little bit in the gallery. You know, we unload the annealer and we say, okay, this one's a nice one. Let's move this one back here. And it does rotate completely. So every time you come in, it'll look a little bit different.
What are some of the reactions that you get from people when they, you know, first experience Benzaiten?
Well, I have to say that... because I founded Benzaiten with a certain mission in mind, which was to help provide professional artists world-class fabrication facilities and equipment to do their work. But the other part of that mission was to relate all that information to the lay people that, you know, hopefully would create a much deeper appreciation mm-hmm. of what goes into the three-dimensional piece of artwork. And that has really worked. I would say that everybody that comes and takes a lesson and goes through just making a simple
I've gotten so many times with
a new perspective, right?
After they've taken the class, I can't imagine how they made the pieces inside. And exactly. that's what, you know, it sparks the interest. And honestly, that's kind of how when I began, after you learn how hard it is just to get a little bit of tiny piece of glass out of the furnace. And then you think, how do the people make these lifelike like fish and 10 feet tall sculptures out of glass? Mm-hmm. It just blows your mind. And you just have to figure out. It's like this puzzle that I will continue to try to figure out for the rest of our lives. It's this.
So it's very very rewarding for me as the founder to pretty much accomplished.
Yeah, that vision has come to fruition where people the education, the positive, you know, your artists are getting the positive feedback mm-hmm. that they're like, wow, we really have a deeper understanding of, like you said, what goes mm-hmm. into creating these works and the requirements mm-hmm. of the facilities.
And we help professional artists, which was a big part of it. But like Josh Freitas, who does all the art fairs all around, and he came from California. He had a girlfriend here, but he was so thrilled to learn about Benzaiten. He's been with us almost from the beginning since we've been open. Wow. And I mean, to set up a home, your own studio with this kind of equipment and annealing, it's tens of thousands of dollars. And most artists don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be responsible for maintaining it. Yeah. And so that's part of the whole mission of what we do.
Yeah. And they don't want to have to tell their insurance provider.
Exactly.
Have this on their property.
I mean, it's not like opening up a painting studio.
So this could be a question for either of you or both of you if something pops to mind. Is there a piece of art that you've created that expanded your creativity in an unexpected way?
Answer that one.
Well, I think this is a fun story. We were attempting to cast one of my bigger figures. I mean, it's like 26 inches tall. I mean, it's pretty big for a glass cast piece. And it came out of the annealer, and it had this flashing all over it. Okay, flashing is when there's a little crack in the encasement mold where the glass seeps out, and it kind of creates this flare. It's kind of hard to describe, but anyway, he was going to, Jose, who's our glass caster, was going to try to remove all that. And I said, no. I know exactly, the second I saw it, I knew exactly what I wanted to do with it. So I painted that portion green and then proceeded to do all vines coming up her legs because she had tiny fissures coming up her legs, and I created vines and roses and, you know, and
yeah,
so
sometimes, yeah, I think the material,
it's the most appreciated piece I've done so far.
Really? Wow. See, and those are those, you know, Bob Ross happy accident moments.
Happy accidents.
Yeah, definitely.
That's really cool that you get to turn into, yeah, something unexpected. Grace, I want to ask about, you've studied glass techniques in Italy, Murano, and beyond. Is there an unexpected lesson that you've received?
I guess just lesson wise, I think so many things from glass like translates to life and that is kind of unexpected. I mean, you know, I was talking earlier about how it really teaches you to let go. You can't control whether things crack. It teaches you to kind of move with the flow. Like every place that I've been, a lot of these lessons about life are just translated through the glass. And I just think that that's become just such a good teacher for me. It's a never ending teacher. And that I would say would be my unexpected lesson, is that what can I take from this art that translates to my life and makes me a better human, not only a better artist in the medium, but a better person, I guess.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that answer. My next question is one that I ask everybody who comes on this show, which is that, and I'm going to say, besides Benzaiten, if there's one area that you both could name, area, place, event, exhibit, that you think anybody visiting or living in Palm Beach County should experience in related to the arts, what would that be? You know, could be a public piece of artwork, could be something in a museum, could be the museum itself, you know, any of these places.
I discovered W. Moda, the Wiener Museum of Decorative Arts, about 5 years ago, and I've been bringing people down there ever since. It's this, right now it's one man's collection, but it's going to expand from that. And he started with ceramics going from the early art form of ceramics in the 1500s, I think, all the way up to the present. And now he's collecting glass. He wants to move to Lake Worth. He wants to build a permanent museum. He's been renting space up till now. So he wants to build this huge museum. In fact, he's already partnered with Chihuly to do an installation like they have on the west coast of Florida. So this could be a major game changer for Lake Worth and for the arts in our area.
Absolutely.
So I'm very excited about that.
That's wonderful to hear. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Something new.
Yeah.
I was to say, in the past, we've partnered with the Cornell Art Museum in Delray, a little bit farther than Palm Beach, but that was that we had a hot glass exhibition where some of our people that work at the studio and different local artists from all around Florida exhibited some of their hot glass, which was just incredible to see, like the range and honestly even how it connected everybody's work kind of felt underneath. There was like this invisible thread that Florida put into all of us and that we put into our work. So that was a great show to see, and they have rotating different exhibitions coming up.
Yeah, that's a great one too. So, you know, getting closer to the end of the show, which has been so great to talk with you both, and I've learned a lot about the center, and I know our audience is going to be excited to connect with it. I always want to see if we can leave people some advice. So whether that's, you know, a future artist, somebody who's mid-career or wants to try a different medium, or somebody who's, you know, wanting to maybe be the founder of the next really creative arts hub. If either of you, both of you, have some advice that you'd like to leave for somebody, love to hear what that might be. I think for art-wise, one of the best advice that I had learned about was from The Creative Act by Rick Rubin. He's a great author about when you create art with the intention for it to be sold, you're creating a commercial project. You're not creating that you stray from your art a little bit. And the more art that you create that excites you, the art that you, you know, those little passion projects that you follow, those have, I've always found in my work to be the most successful. For example, last week, I had one of our old friends that worked at the studio. He came in and he said, I wanted something really fun today. And we all came up with this collaborative idea to make this tentacle that wrapped around a vase. And it was just something fun. That's just something to play. And immediately that sold. And I was thinking, oh, why do these, you know, sometimes it's more interesting to follow just that whimsy, exciting idea than to kind of go into the idea of what art can I make that will sell? I think that you get the better, more accurate, just more powerful art when you just explore what makes you excited personally and what's the most authentic and real to your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you might be surprised. You never know how people are going to respond. Yes. So why not try and go down that thread that really, you know, gives you life as a creative?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, I just think that being an artist is more of a calling. I mean, you really have to love it because it's not that easy to make a living out of it. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with teaching part-time and, you know, in order to do your own work. I mean, just to get down to the nitty-gritty of the dollars and cents of being an artist, I mean, that's something that artists have to realize.
So true. I love that you said that because I think there's a lot of people who maybe would hesitate to call themselves artists because they don't do it full time. And that's not the truth, is it, at all? You know, whether you're teaching and you're in the arts or you're have a totally different side profession that allows you to maintain your practice, you're an artist one way or the other, no matter how many hours you're able to devote to it or how much, you know, you can be an artist without ever making money off of it ever. And you're an artist.
You can work for galleries. You know, there's a lot of things you can do part time that help you get out there in the art community, whether it be through teaching or the gallery system, where you can make money and also do your artwork and make contacts at the same time.
And be further involved in the community. And yeah, that's true. That's great advice. I appreciate that. Good. Well, thank you again, both, for coming on here. I really appreciate the conversation. Yeah. If we had more time, I would have more questions for you. But, you know, maybe there's a future episode that we'll come visit the center and see some things in person there. So in the meantime, if people want to get connected to your work, to the Ben Zeighton Center, how can they find you? Leave us with websites and social medias.
Well, just plug in Ben Zeighton. And by the way, Ben Zeighton is the goddess of all things flowing.
Fantastic. I did not know that. In case anybody wondered
why I called it that. She, you know, we have hot glass. We're eventually going to have hot bronze. And she loves the children. There's a lot of good things about her. The thing I like best is that she married a dragon, tamed it, and then rode around on it. So
I love that inspiration.
That's a good last one. Feels like a little bit.
She's a history.
Badass goddess. So anyway.
That's fantastic.
Bensighton.org is our website. And then for our personal Joanne's Instagram, I think, is JB Burko.
JB Burko. And it's BenZeightonCenter.org.
Okay, fantastic.
But if you just plug in Ben Zeighton, it'll just pop right up.
Yeah, very Googleable, for sure. And then do you have an Instagram as well?
Yep. My Instagram would be Grace Chepnick Art.
Fantastic.
So all of my art up there. And the website will be connected there, gracechepnick.com.
And we'll be including those in the show notes. So for anyone who's watching and you want to get connected, please, you know, look at the website, view their workshops, view the available, you know, times where you can come visit. You can get hands-on with Grace in the hot shop.
I
hope to check it out. So thank you again to everyone who sat with us and for sharing your stories today. We appreciate you all for tuning in. And thank you to our sponsors, as always, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. I will see you next time on the Arty Girl Podcast.